News Talk 1340 KROC AM. Good morning. I'm Andy Brownell. It's Rochester Today on what is shaping up to be a beautiful Friday. Tom Ostrom's here as well. Morning, Thomas.
Morning, Andrew.
You still have the lumberjack shirt on.
Yeah.
I thought with the warmer weather, you might have finally got a new shirt. But
well,
okay.
It's comfortable and it's utilitarian.
We're thinking spring now, Ostrom. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
And I guess to go along with spring, there's an annual event out at RCTC, Rochester Community and Technical College, and it's taking place this weekend. And Rod Mildebrand is on the phone with us, connected up, and he's one of those involved. And Rod, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. When my kids were little, which is a millennium ago, I took them to this event, and it was one of the coolest things I ever went to with the kids. What is the title? It's a physics show, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, we call it the physics demo show, and we have three of them, Saturday at 2 and at 7, and Sunday at 2 at Hill Theater. And the show is a bunch of physics demonstrations. Some college students, our club, and myself put on, and a lot of them are interactive. We have, we're trying to teach some science and get kids interested in science and learning something about science, but also to entertain them some. So we have a bed of nails. We have some high voltage. We have a Van de Graaff generator, so, make your hair stand up.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and crush a barrel with air pressure, a 55-gallon drum. And then this year we're having a theme of music, so we're doing some things with sound and with music. See some sound and some flames is one of the demonstrations.
Oh, you got to get the pyromania in there a little bit too, right?
That's always popular, yeah.
And I know with the kids, it's wonderful to see when they get the connection between these laws of physics and things that are happening right in front of them, physical evidence of the science that they will hopefully be learning as they move through the school system. Is that the entire idea behind what you're doing here?
It is. I mean, certainly part of the idea is to try and get kids interested in science and give them a positive view of science and get them curious, interested, and also, like I say, entertain them at the same time. That's what we're aiming at.
All right, and if folks want to go, maybe give us times for the three shows. And
sure.
Are tickets necessary ahead of time, or do you show up at the door? How do you get in?
Sure, we sell tickets at the door. So it's at Hill Theater at RCTC campus, and Saturday at 2 p.m., and again at 7 p.m., and then Sunday at 2 p.m. $7 per ticket, $1 off if you bring a non-perishable food item to donate.
Oh, great. Well, good luck with the show, and thanks for calling in.
All right. I'll mention one last thing, which is that the money we raise goes for our students towards taking a scientific trip. We're going to go to Boulder, Colorado, and tour several national labs, National Renewable Energy Laboratory, and some others, to give them a view of what's really going on the cutting edge of science. And so the money's going to a good cause.
Sounds like a great program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck this weekend. And folks, if you haven't been to this, bring your kids. They'll love it.
As a retiree from the RCTC faculty, I know I've always been impressed with the creative staff, and this is just another example of the good education you can get at our local college, and it's nice to know. So congrats and kudos to all concerned.
Thank you.
All right, Rod. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Sure.
Okay, Thomas, anything else?
We might get something from the Scott Hosier Veterans Roundtable. If not, I will do the information at the top of the hour. I have a mailbag of myself. I had written to Senator McCain when Sergeant Andrew Tamarisi, the U.S. Marine Corps veteran and sergeant, went over the Mexican border by mistake and was imprisoned for quite a while. And I wrote Senator McCain, I said, you're a veteran and you're concerned with border issues with our neighbor, Mexico. Can you tell me what you're doing about this? I don't see the Obama administration active on it or as concerned about it as I think they should be. And since I sent McCain the letter, Tamarisi was released, but Senator McCain says this, Mr. Ostrom, thank you for your concern. You can imagine that we have been very active on this. I certainly have. It's a Mexican judicial matter, but an accidental incursion of the border. And I personally was dealing with Eduardo Medina Mora, the ambassador of Mexico to the United States, regarding the status of the sergeant. And then on November 1st, Mr. Tamarisi was released from prison. I'm gratified the case was resolved, and thank you for contacting me on this matter. And then, so I responded, and I said, "Dear Senator McCain, thank you for your response and actions. Now you have to help the Senate get rid of the filibuster like Senator Reid did and get on Obama's and President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry's case for counterproductive, destructive foreign policies in the Middle East, bordering on ignorance, and the dangerous policies with Iran and for them insulting our allies, Egypt's General al-Sisi, and Saudi Arabia opposes the Kerry-Obama policies toward Iran, and the insulting treatment that the administration gives our ally, the only democracy in the Middle East, Netanyahu. If you have time, please inform me on what you and your colleagues are doing about those issues." Thank you.
And he said, "Your zip code is not in Arizona."
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought he wasn't answering, because they often don't respond to people who aren't constituents. But he did, and it's a personal letter. It's not a form letter. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Anyway, so then I said, "Now pursue this, Senator." No. things.
And when you're done with that, I got another list of things.
And another thing, hey, another thing, hey. But anyway, that's our mailbag.
All right, we're going to take our break, and we'll jump right into it. 282-1234, by the way, is the phone number to call if you want to get in on the conversation. Not too long from now, I imagine, with the warm weather coming our way, we'll see the root beer stand on 4th Street Southeast open up. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Roscoe's Root Beer and Ribs. That, truly to me, is a sign that spring has arrived, when we see the root beer stand open. So here, keep our fingers crossed and hope we see it soon. But in the meantime, you want your Roscoe's treats tonight as we celebrate the warmer weather. Head out to the North location right up by Shopko North, and they can fill you up with all the wonderful barbecue treats, that award-winning sauce. And I have my favorites on the side, so I just keep it simple. But they have this blackboard up there that's just chock full of what you can have for sides. The list is just incredible. Yep. So you can customize your meals. It's just an amazing selection of sides that you can have with every dish.
It supplements the barbecue beef and barbecue pork and the ham, the pulled chicken, all of that that is so good. I'm going to go there today, Andrew. If you tell them when your birthday is, they keep track and send you a card. You can go in there and they'll match the cost of the meal. Up to $10, anything that you choose. So I'm going to go in there, and I'll get a Chicago-style hot dog while I wait. That's the yellow mustard and the Vienna Chicago relish, chopped onions, tomato wedges, the dill pickle, celery salt, and the Vienna beef frank. That's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to give them the card they sent for Mary's birthday and take home some of these sides you're talking about, plus maybe some pulled chicken.
Get that delicious barbecued beans that they serve. Mm. And don't forget about Roscoe's for your catering needs. Graduation parties right around the corner. And they can help you out. Get your date booked soon, because I'm sure things fill up pretty quick. It's 285-0501. That's for Roscoe's Catering. Roscoe's Root Beer and Ribs. The North location is open right now. They're up by Shopko North.
Forecast on News Talk 1340 KROC AM.
It is brought to you by Mystic Lake Casino. Tickets go on sale tomorrow to see Martina McBride at Mystic Lake Friday, June 19th. Experience hits like Wild Angels and My Baby Loves Me Live. Get tickets tomorrow, mysticlake.com. We are expecting that mercury to climb into the mid-30s this afternoon. Partly cloudy skies. Overnight low tonight around 25 degrees, and then tomorrow we could have a high in the upper 30s, and we should see at least a little bit of sunshine tomorrow. Saturday night, there's a chance of some snow. We could have maybe an inch of accumulation as the temperature drops down to about 20 degrees, and a chance of snow early in the day Sunday, maybe a dusting, and then we should get up to about 40 the high again on Monday. We're talking 46 Tuesday with sunshine. and sunshine Wednesday and a high near 50 degrees. Yeah, right now sunshine and 22 degrees in downtown Rochester at KROC AM. It's 23 past 10 o'clock. I'm Andy Brownell with Tom Ostrom. 282-1234 is our number, and I know Tom's got some stuff we want to get to right away here, but we have a phone call, Tom, as well, so we always like to honor our listeners and jump to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding on. You're on KROC.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is Tom.
Hey,
Tom. And Andy.
All right. Hello, Thomas.
I would like to let your listeners know we have a roundtable meeting at Autumn Ridge Church this coming Monday, 7 o'clock. Elmo Woolian from Houston, who was on the USS Hornet, will share his experiences. And from right here in Rochester, Lenny Jorgensen will talk about his experiences on a destroyer, the USS Ingersoll, World War II.
Okay, the Hornet, was that, which was that the battle?
The Hornet, he was a plank owner. That means he was on it when it first was launched. But he was there for the Doolittle Raid, and he was there when it was sunk.
Okay, that was the Doolittle Raid was what I was trying to connect it to.
Yeah,
I knew you were.
The aircraft carrier Hornet and a destroyer Ingersoll.
That's correct.
And it was sunk. Was it sunk at, goodness gracious, my history
the
is...
The Battle of Santa Cruz. It participated in Midway and Coral Sea.
Right,
Coral Sea, yeah.
Actually, the Japanese ended up sinking it. He's got a little story there itself. When we thought it was beyond repair, we tried to sink it, and we couldn't do it, so the Japanese finished it off.
Just amazing.
Yeah. Now, this is March 9, this coming Monday at the Autumn Ridge Church. What time and what's available for everybody?
Well, there'll be things to do at 6:30, and the program starts at 7 with an old-time radio show. As we all, those of us that are old enough, can remember old-time radio. I forget exactly what the topic is this time, but it's always fun whenever they do it. Gail Vukov and her little team put that together, and it's just a treat.
Excellent. So it's Monday evening, Autumn Ridge.
That's correct. Anybody is welcome to come.
Very good. And doors open again at what time?
6:30, things to do, 7 o'clock, program.
Excellent.
Students. We had a lot of students from Pine Island. At our Saturday morning program, I just can't believe we don't get more students from more schools.
And you can come out there and hear about life aboard an old diesel-powered aircraft carrier that played a crucial role in the war in the Pacific. I mean, following the Pearl Harbor, the Hornet must have been, what, we had one other aircraft carrier after
Pearl Harbor?
Enterprise, yeah.
Yeah, and boy, that attack on Japan frightened the Japanese. They thought they were invulnerable with geographic isolation. So a lot of interesting things are going to be told to us Monday night.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, speaking of World War II, and I don't, this is completely disconnected, well, kind of connected. I watched this movie last weekend, and it's got Tom Cruise in it. It's a sci-fi movie. And it's an alien invasion, and the aliens conquer Europe, and they do an aerial and amphibious invasion of Europe to try to get it back from the aliens. I know this sounds like nonsense, but they did the battle scene that they did. They recreated the Normandy invasion in the future using, I would say, weaponry that you could imagine maybe 20 to 25 years, 30 years down the road from where we're at now. So it's not spaceships and ray guns. They're still using projectiles, but the transportation is modernized and some of the weaponry is far more sophisticated than we have now, especially considering the robotics that are being developed now.
Yeah.
It's all very plausible if you look into the future. And they recreate the Normandy in the landing on the beach, and it's one of the most incredible battle scenes I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Do they do unmanned vehicles or drones or things? How did that develop, maybe?
I'm sure they did. It happens. Every imaginable piece of weaponry is thrown at
lasers.
No, that's the funny thing. Not a lot of laser action, even though we're hearing about that today.
Not a lot of laser? That's very good, broadcaster. Not a lot of laser. That's a tongue twister.
Alliteration.
Oh, an alliteration, too. God, okay, interesting. You're a sci-fi guy.
Speaking of lasers, the military is now, this is sci-fi, and it's happening today. We're going to jump into the news break in a minute here, so we might as well, before we go crazy with what you have. the power of these lasers now, and this is technology, really, it's only the last 40 years that we've been really cranking this thing up, that from a mile away, they were able to melt the engine block in a vehicle with a laser beam. That's just out of this world.
That is. I hope their targeting is accurate.
Yeah, that'll be the whole deal.
Yeah. One quick thing before the break. We've got 2 minutes. Get that out of the way because I want to get to foreign policy.
Yes.
But Hillary Clinton is still in trouble. Former Secretary of State, we find out now she had her own computer server, her own email account, and classified documents, State Department documents. That's why people couldn't get Benghazi information in Hillary's involvement. And this could be a violation of federal law, of national security concerns, of carelessness. And Hillary Clinton knew this because she had to let one of her ambassadors go because he was doing that. And the Obama administration made it clear to the State Department they couldn't do it. And here she is again. It shows Clintonian contempt for law, for rules, for regulations, protecting themselves from criticism. And this is going to open up Benghazi again. They're going to subpoena her for any Benghazi documents. Many years ago, she bawled out President Bush staff for doing this. She knew what the troubles were, but she's so concerned with the many scandals that couple has had of protecting herself from scrutiny. Well, the National Journal broke this, and the Wall Street Journal talked about it, and even the Washington Post, a liberal journal, the New York Times is
liberal.
They're all over it. They're all over it, and this isn't going to go away. She's becoming more and more unsuitable for the presidency, I think, in that name, and it brings back Whitewater and it brings back all the scandals of the Clinton years. And I think this opens the door for her opponent, the senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, because the left is dissatisfied with Hillary anyway, with her ties to Wall Street and her hawkishness, ironically, in the Middle East. But Middle East failures in this administration, she's going to be tied to, and I think this is serious.
I think it's very serious. Whether or not it would, you use the term resonate with the voters is another thing, because it's kind of a little bit esoteric, because people, well, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that the only person without extraordinary investigative efforts to know what's going on with these emails would be Hillary Clinton, especially if they're encrypted emails, because if they went through other servers in their travels and they were encrypted, I'm sure they were, they're State Department business, there's just virtually no way to recover these emails without her cooperation. Thereby, she actually controls the flow of information to any investigation, and without a court order to confiscate that actual computer that's sitting in her home, you're just going to have to rely on, well, I gave you what I'm going to give you, and you're going to have to take my word for it that that's all there is.
Well, Judicial Watch has a Freedom of Information Act suit going on to get some information. And this whole system, you know a lot more about computers than I do, but this setup she did makes her very susceptible to hacking and foreign enemies finding things out more easily than they could had she done things properly.
More easily. Every computer is at risk of hacking, whether it's a NSA computer or the one that's sitting on your desk. And I would hope that the State Department servers are more protected and have better safeguards than what she could have had in her den and hooked up to what was probably a commercial cable network system for transmitting the data.
They said she had her own server. More about what that is than me.
You can take any desktop computer and make it into a server. It's just the way you use the computer. That's all that means. But it's physically, those emails are physically stored in a digital form in her house and likely not anywhere else.
And it would have to be done with malice aforethought.
I would say that you're going to hear a whole lot of, well, we just didn't think about it. We were doing this. We totally forgot that we had the email stored there. I meant to migrate them back over to the State Department, but I kind of slipped my mind. I'm sure that's going to be, and like I say, I question whether the voter will care.
Well, I think they will, because it brings up Clintonian things. But then she'll say, what difference does it make now?
Yeah, what difference? We've got to take our break. We're already late for the news break, but we'll take some calls as well. After the news, 23 in the downtown. Kim David's up next on KROC AM. News Talk 1340 KROC AM. Good morning. I'm Andy Brownell, Rochester Today, along with Tom Ostrom on a beautiful Friday morning. 282-1234 is our number. We've had Tom, a caller, on hold all the way through the news break, so we'll waste little time to get to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I have a question for Tom. He might, or Andy, if you, either one of you may know this. You know, this isn't the first time that Hillary has had a brush with questionable behavior. When she was fired from the Watergate investigation team, and the general reason was unethical behavior, was that also hiding evidence?
It was. She was a counsel on the Watergate investigation of Nixon, and a Democrat lawyer that was the head of the investigation fired her because she hid documents that in fact exonerated Nixon, and she took them out of the areas they were in and hid them in other venues and got caught at it. That's how vicious she is. And a Democrat said, "You're unfit for this," and fired her. They're secretive folks.
It's worked for them.
No, oh. I think she's always known the value of sorting evidence.
Oh, and that, yeah, then she took documents out of the Rose Law Firm where she was an attorney in Arkansas and hid them, and they were found finally in the White House by investigators when she and her husband went to the White House. They're duplicitous and sneaky and dishonest and corrupt. And I was talking to Kim David in the newsroom, and he said, so much so that people are so used to it, they'll say, so what? What do you think?
Well, and I think that's probably her greatest defense is not the right word, but the greatest protection is that I think people will say that, well, politicians all do this kind of stuff. Well, I think it's pretty exceptional behavior, not necessarily or not positively exceptional behavior.
Yeah,
this is a pattern I think that goes back. Gosh, wasn't Nixon investigation the first real job she had?
She worked at, I guess so, yes, just out of law school, I think you're right.
Yeah. So this is something that's been repeated, and, you know, you've listed a couple of other things there, Tom, that really the same activity. And then when she used the poor guy who had been the Kenyan ambassador to Kenya, when she fired him because he wasn't using the government email system, that's just, I don't know. What in the world is going on?
Yeah, what
on?
In the world?
Yeah.
But it just boggles your mind, doesn't
it? And the irony
it
of this is because there's no way to know what the contents of that server.
Oh.
What is in there may not be all that harmful, but the way she and her husband seem to be obsessive about their control of this information, it causes everybody to leap to the conclusion that it is really damning material in there.
Well, anytime you see a pattern of behavior, that is continuous or repeated during her professional career, you have to say, well, gee, you know, she just kind of likes to do this, and even if she was. She did not. If there's nothing there that's being hidden, which I would have a tough time swallowing that concept. But even if there were, you'd say, you know, just the fact that she was doing that is the problem.
Yeah. Why would she?
The second thing is that and Andy, you did mention that all servers can be hacked. I saw something this morning where, and I forget the tool that they used. It isn't really that important, the name. But a professional hacker went in and found out that she actually had 8 different accounts that she was using within her own server.
Sure, but that's not unusual at all.
Well, no, but it shows that, you know, this is not something that is... I would suspect that government computers would be better protected
yes.
than some homegrown.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I would assume.
That's the national security element here. But the Clintons seem to think they are privileged and above the law.
Well, it's kind of like, who was the guy that did all the embezzling and stuff? And oh, Richard, not Icahn, anyway.
No, the guy out in New York City that, $50 billion.
I remember I read an article about him, and this was years ago, but it talked about his behavior. This is the way he behaved in every instance, even when he was playing tennis. Instead of being back on the line where you're supposed to begin, he would start from, the rules are for other people.
Yeah, he cheated tennis.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think that this is something that is probably good for Hillary that it happened now.
Sure, yeah. It's a good point.
They have plenty of time for people to get weary of this.
Well, maybe. But you got Kurt Gowdy, the South Carolina congressman and district attorney that was a successful prosecutor, and he has subpoenaed. He's still working on Benghazi, and this gives him another edge to get more information about it and cast the net.
I believe that is where this came up, is when Gowdy said, well, wait a minute, these are supposed to be on the government server, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Where the heck are they?
Yeah, and it, okay. He started kind of... Yeah, you make a mental note not to make that guy mad.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call.
Bye.
Thanks.
Right, anyway, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Good morning. You're on KROC.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
A short story. Years ago, back when Bill Clinton was first considering running for president, I was talking to on a conference call to Arkansas. And so I was making small talk and waiting for everybody to get on the line. And so I said, well, you folks must really be proud of your governor there. I said, in Minnesota, I said, we were kind of proud that Hubert Humphrey ran. I said, even though not everybody voted for him, we were kind of proud that a hometown boy ran. And real quiet on the other end of the line, finally, the older fellow on the conference call spoke up and said, son, we're just so glad that son of a gun is going somewhere else. And he says, and we pray he takes his carpet bag of wife with him. And I thought, holy cow, nobody knows anything about this couple.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, boy.
Thanks a lot for calling me. That's a great story.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks a lot. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Yeah. I think I agree with the Clintons that they are above the rules that apply to the rest of us. They've successfully got along that way for years. I kind of had her number when I found out that she made money in the cattle market, whether it went up or down. That was back when they were investigating her about Whitewater.
Yeah. Tyson Chicken Company gave her a deal. And then the stock market successes she had she said, just reading the Wall Street Journal.
This is just like nostalgia now, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're back in the mid-90s again.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
It's funny. this is going to sound so bad when I say this. I actually have a positive, when I think of the Clintons, I have a positive feeling, but it has nothing to do with the Clintons. All it has to do with is where I was at that time of my life. That was when we were a young family starting out. And we had the little kids, and we were busy doing all that stuff. And this was all just background noise happening because you were so obsessed with what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, those, to me, are the good old days. And it has nothing to do with whether or not Bill Clinton was a good president or not. It just has to do with that period of time. That's all.
I'll even concede and get some conservatives may angry that President Clinton was a very effective politician and president. He did some smart things. But even the bimbo patrols, they're covering that up, and he got away with it, and Hillary did. We lost a Republican senator for tapping his foot in a restroom at the Minneapolis airport. Our guys suffer when they even have the image of doing something wrong. But Clinton, the nation loves him. He and Hillary make fortunes giving speeches because they still are loved.
They still love him, yeah. We'll do one more phone call, and we have to take a quick break. Good morning, Ron Carroll C.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to, tongue-in-cheek, say I think we should put Snowden on the case because then we'd get to the bottom of it.
I like
and
that.
And Barney says it's not tongue-in-cheek either. So
yeah, I agree with you.
Oh, good.
Bring the experts in.
That's right.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks. It's not being called this yet, so I'm going to claim. We're going to lay claim to it right now. Emailgate.
Okay.
See? Okay.
You're
you heard
ahead of the game.
Yep. When the New York Times uses it, you heard it here. 23 degrees. We'll take a real quick break, and I know, Tom, we've got to talk about some foreign affairs. The Netanyahu speech, and that's coming up in just a moment on KROC AM.
Now, your Weather Eye forecast on News Talk 1340, KROC AM.
Brought to you by Mystic Lake Casino. Tickets on sale tomorrow to see Martina McBride at Mystic Lake. That show will be Friday, June 19th. Experience hits like Wild Angels and My Baby Loves Me live. Get tickets tomorrow, Saturday, at mysticlake.com. I love this forecast. Mid-30s today, overnight tonight, down to about 25. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, high in the upper 30s. We know now Saturday night, late Saturday night, maybe some light snow, maybe an inch down to 20 degrees. That light snow could continue into Sunday morning and maybe a dusting. But then on Sunday, a high near 40 degrees, sunshine and 40 on Monday. Tuesday's high in the mid-40s with sunshine. Upper 40s, perhaps even 50 degrees by the time Wednesday rolls around with sunshine. That's what we're talking about at this point. Right now, sunshine 23 degrees in downtown Rochester at KROC AM. It's 9 minutes away from 11 o'clock. Tom Ostrom's here. I'm Andy Brownell. And Benjamin Netanyahu.
Well, before we get there, one more Hillary thing that's vulnerable. They have an institution, their institute, where all kinds of foreign money right. has come in while she was Secretary of State. And some from Arab nations, and you wonder, will there be any connections between any favors done in diplomacy or negotiations connected to that money? That would really be harmful, if not...
That could be what they call it, quid pro quo.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Okay.
Got to get out of those emails. Netanyahu.
okay.
It was interesting to watch because... What the heck happened that day that drowned out the coverage of his speech? Because it should have been dominant. And it by the middle of the afternoon, it had already dropped off the top of the news cycle. And darn it all, I cannot remember what the heck happened that day that knocked it off. But it was, It didn't get the coverage it deserved. I wish there was some event that occurred that day that, to my view, that all of a sudden, oh, Netanyahu gave a speech, it's all done. Let's move on.
Well, I have a different view. I even watched CNN and some of the others covering it. Now, a lot of them were hostile to Netanyahu. The Democrats are protective of the president. He doesn't know about the Middle East, what the Egyptian general does, El-Sisi. He doesn't know what the King of Jordan knows. He doesn't know what Netanyahu knows. And they're very angry at Netanyahu for making the president look bad, making Kerry look bad about what they're dealing with, who they're dealing with. Netanyahu reminded us that the Iranians, who are now helping the Iraqis take back some territory from ISIS, that the Iranians killed hundreds of American soldiers when we were in the war in Iraq. And Netanyahu traced the terrorism, and while Kerry's saying give them the benefit of the doubt, looking so inept, the Ayatollah gave a speech to some Navy officers and said, "Down with America, down with Israel," you know. But Netanyahu, I think, showed he was informed and articulate and a diplomatic statesman, tracing history, tracing the geopolitics here, and I think. President Obama came out looking petty because he hates anybody that disagrees with him, hates anybody that makes him look bad. Netanyahu should, Obama should have said, well, we don't like how this was done, but I'm going to sit and talk with Bibi because Israel's the only democracy in the Middle East and they're our only solid ally. The Saudis disagree with what Kerry's doing with Iran and Egypt does, and I think... Netanyahu came out looking like a statesman. He did have something new to say, and despite what President Obama said, Obama read the transcript, didn't hear the speech. Netanyahu said increase the sanctions and tell Iran what to stop doing if they want a deal. But Netanyahu is so articulate, so eloquent, so knowledgeable, and our president looks so petty. And the Democrats that wouldn't go, and by the way, lots of Democrats went, and lots of Democrats stood up and applauded Netanyahu. That was shown, too, by the cameras. But and then you got Al Franken, our senator. He didn't go because he said it's too partisan. Well, the Democrats are making it political and partisan. I just think Netanyahu went up in everybody's mind, educated the public, and Obama looked petty. And I think he's ignorant. I don't think he'd be, I don't know what his IQ is, but I don't think he knows, or else he's so ideological he doesn't care to know, the complexity of what's going on in the Middle East.
What? Okay, I understand the claim of partisanship on this is how it went about, and it didn't follow protocol, that this was arranged by an Israeli official who used to be a Republican operative.
The Israeli ambassador to the United States.
And then Boehner extended an invitation, did not inform the president, and boom, this thing blew up in that fashion. But what about our relationship and the speech was partisan? Was there, did he lash out at the president? Did he lash out?
No, he was very gracious. He thanked America for the help. He thanked Obama for his previous assistance to Israel and defense secretary. But now Obama said, if the Congress wants to get involved in this treaty that comes out, I'm going to veto it. What kind of an attitude is that, that the Congress shouldn't be involved in treaties? And one more thing, Alan Dershowitz, the liberal professor of law at Harvard, he said that President Obama completely mishandled this. He is obligated to answer Netanyahu's contentions if he wants credibility and support.
And the credibility part is key here, because if the American public is going to support any sort of arrangement with the Iranians, it better have credibility, because Netanyahu's concerns are valid. And if you have no way to actually verify that they are halting work on weaponry with a very stringent inspection program and an automatic sort of punishment that would kick in if violations are found without having to go back to the UN and go through a whole bunch of monkey business, I think the American public will have a hard time buying into this. But that being said, if you did come up with some sort of agreement that would actually prevent the Iranians from developing a weapon, I think the American people would be all on board it. But that being said, from what you've heard from Kerry and the president, it does not seem that that is even the arrangement that they're looking for at this time.
That's right. And the International Atomic Energy Agency and the gentleman that heads it, I believe he's a Japanese gentleman, said that Iranian activities, they have deceived us. They have worked on the bomb. They have kept sites from us. They don't let inspectors in. That doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't sound good, but you have the real world as it's happening right now, too, and we have very little influence in that part of the world as far as having the Iranians actually listen to what we'd want them to say. They are gaining in influence throughout that region very rapidly, and at the same time, our influence in both Israel and in Saudi Arabia is diminishing, and that is a problem. I had a thought the other day. We should have just let the Russians keep Afghanistan. If we actually go back to that point in the Cold War, if you wanted to rewrite history books, we don't arm the Mujahideen. The Russians are stuck in a long-range conflict in Afghanistan. How much of would we have had a radical Sunni extremist movement develop? Well, we could have, but it would have likely been aimed at the Russians instead of us.
Well, and it was. The Russians had to withdraw because they were getting defeated by missiles that President Reagan sent to the Mujahideen that al-Qaeda later used. But what do you think of the Iranians commanding Iraqi forces against ISIS? Now, that's really undercutting us, isn't it?
But it was completely expected. Once you have a Shiite majority government in Iraq, you have a radical Sunni insurgency in the form of ISIS, and you don't have the U.S. presence stabilizing that country right now. The only neighbor with a military force that could come in there and would come in there with boots on the ground and armored material. It's the Iranians. They're next door. They're natural allies to this. It was many, many people predicted this is exactly what would occur when we withdrew troops, and we announced ahead of time when we would withdraw them.
Mm-hmm.
None of this should have been a surprise to anybody.
Okay.
Enough said.
Mm-hmm.
He's nodding his head. He's doing that on the radio.
I'm just basking in your brilliance and eloquence.
Let's have a wonderful weekend, folks. On Monday, the Legal Eagle, David Shulman's going to be in the studio. So get your phone calls ready for David Shulman, the Legal Eagle, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Have a great weekend, everybody. It's 11 o'clock, News Talk 1340, KROC AM, Rochester.